This is Joe Basso from Music Radar, the place for music makers, and I'm speaking with Sammy Hagar, Sammy who needs no introduction at all. Sammy, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. But, Joe, why would you say I don't need an introduction? Everyone needs an introduction. Like, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the Beatles. I mean, you know, everybody needs an introduction. I'll take it as a compliment. I'm happy.
What I mean is everybody knows what you've done, your songs, your career, you know.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Yeah.
Probably if everyone knew everything I've done, though, that might be a different type of introduction.
Maybe we'll get into that.
Yeah, well, dig, brother. I'm a pretty honest guy. I think everybody knows that.
So you have a new solo album coming out called Cosmic Universal Fashion.
Yeah. And, you know, it's just to go off on it for a second, it's the wackiest way I've ever made a record in my life. Normally you decide, okay, I'm going to set these months aside. We're going to get, you know, go in and either write or start recording a CD. You know, it's, you know, in every band I've ever been in. So you plan it. This thing wasn't planned. I've been writing songs ever since I built my own studio. I've been like just experimenting with songs, you know, and I'll get the band. I'll say, hey, everybody meet at the studio on Tuesday, and we're gonna work on this new idea I have. And then, you know, so we just put it down. You know, we put it down in demo form. And then I like it, and we spiff it up. Sometimes we play them live. And this record has been recorded over the last five, six, 7 years that way. You know, even the other CDs I made, some of these songs were laying in the side, and I just brought them back up and listened to them and went, wow. Because most of the songs on here are experimental. This is what I'm trying to say. They were experiments. They weren't like writing for a Sammy Hagar record. I was saying, I want to experiment with some music like 2, 4, 3, 6, 5 or When the Sun Don't Shine or Switch on the Light. I mean, those, as you can tell, those are experiments, you know. And when I went back and listened to them for where I'm at in my life today, I'm going, I like this kind of music. I love what I was trying to do back then, and I just spiffed it up, and I ended up with a record. I'm shocked still.
Well, it is very different from what you've done in the past, particularly the title cut, Cosmic Universal Fashion, which I understand came to you, the music track came from an Iraqi musician named Stephen Lost, is that correct?
Yeah, and he sent me 5 songs through Miles Copeland, you know, the guy who used to manage the Police, Stewart's brother, and he said, hey, you interested in, you know, hearing this music? This guy was trying to get a hold of you. And I said, absolutely. You know, I mean, sounds like might have some inspiration in there, you know, something different. And when I heard it, I was just blown away, and that song stood out. I was really busy at the time, and I kind of made the time to run in and finish that song, write the lyrics and do the vocal on it and stuff, and kind of rearrange it, because it was kind of a strange arrangement originally. All them parts weren't kind of in that order, if you know what I mean.
Right.
I had to make a repeat chorus. They were just a bunch of parts, and so it was kind of difficult, but at the same time, I got so inspired, I did it. If I'd had more time, there was a couple more songs that I wouldn't have mind doing, but I just didn't have time. But I love the way it came out, and I'm just loving it. It's the most unique thing I've ever done.
It really is. And, you know, you did add lyrical elements from the Van Halen track Right Now.
Yeah.
And of course you kind of revisited the video in a way.
Yeah, the reason I think all that came about was because when I heard the music after I started, you know, working on a melody and stuff, it started feeling so world beat to me. It started feeling like this song is about the world. You know, being an Iraqi musician, and here I'm an American guy, and we're at war, you know. The fact that two musicians can get together and do something good, it kind of brought out a statement out of me saying, you know, we need to get this world together. You know, it's like here this guy I never even met, you know, and we're getting along just fine. Well, why can't the two countries get along? Why can't the governments get along? You know, so I started thinking in a worldly manner like that, and then it reminded me of the whole Right Now thing about, you know, right now we need change. You know, right now we're in a major crossroads in the world, and in the politics and in the ecology and economics, everything, man. We're like totally at a crossroads. We're either going to crumble or get it together fast. So I figured it was just time for that statement again. And, you know, the words Right Now are so timeless. You could do this 100 years from now, 100 years ago. Say, right now is the time to take, you know, control. And right now is the time to start doing things. Don't wait till tomorrow. Don't wait for someone else to do it. So it's really kind of the same statement. And I just loved it. It just was so inspiring, a very, very inspiring time for me.
On a different note, on the record, you have a track called Loud. Michael Anthony plays bass, but you also have Billy Duffy from The Cult and Matt Sorum. And it is just one of the most fun, rocking cuts I've heard in a long time. What was it like to work with that group of people?
It was so cool. This guy named John Eddy, he's a wonderful songwriter. He wrote some songs for Kid Rock, I think, on his last record. And John Eddy is he wrote this song for me. He goes, you know, I wrote this song about you. He opened a show for me a few years ago in Las Vegas. I'd never met him, and we got to be kind of buddies. I really liked his songwriting style. And he calls and said, I wrote this song for you. I don't know what you're going to think of it. I said, well, send it. And I heard it, and I'm going, what do you mean you wrote this? I wrote this song. You know, I wrote that song about, you know, it sounds so much like a Sammy song, you know.
Right.
I mean, no one's even going to believe someone wrote that song other than me, you know. And I just thought it was so on the money, but it you know, one of my favorite bands of all time is The Cult. You know, I love Removal Machine, and I thought this song could sound like that, because John Eddy wrote it kind of almost country. It was more like
wow.
My countryside, you know. And I thought, no. So I got these guys, and we got together. You know, all these guys have been jammed with me in Cabo 152,000 times every year. So they came up, and we spent a couple of days and knocked it out. And I'm in love with that song, too. You know, it's the only song that the first time we played it live, we played it live once.
Mm-hmm.
And when we played it, it was in between heavy metal and I Can't Drive 55. And I'm telling you right now, it held its own. A brand new song with two of my ultimate classics. That song, the people in the audience were practically singing along. It just seemed so fit. It's just such a great, great fit for my classic side of my rock, you know.
And, no, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm loving the song. If there's such a thing in this day as a rock and roll hit single, it's one.
No, it definitely kicks up the dust in all the right ways. As does a song called Psycho Vertigo, in which your friend Neil Schon appears.
Yeah, Neil Dean, and Michael Anthony. That was going to be Planet Us, and I found that, dusted that out of the basements too, out of the archives. You know, when I had my studio in my house, we all got together over here and we're trying to write a couple songs, and we wrote that song and people threw a hole. We only had two songs in Planet Us, and that were finished, and we recorded them at my house. Of course, at that time, that's when the Van Hagar reunion was coming. And no, I couldn't tell anyone. So I was going forward with these guys as if we were going to do a band, because I wanted to. I loved what we were doing.
Right.
But I knew the Van Halen thing was inevitable. And as soon as I was able to tell them, I had to stop that project. And it was really, really a shame. Neil, I just got a message on my machine last week from Neil about it, saying, yeah, you know, you asshole, we could have, you know, had those, you know, that band Planet Us, but you had to go with Van Halen, and then you sold your tequila company for all that money. You didn't need the money. I said, Neil, I never needed the money. This was strictly, I had to do the Van Halen reunion. I had to. That's just one of those things in history that if it never happened, I would always feel a void. So I had to go do that, and at the sacrifice of Planet Us. But when I heard those two songs, they were so good. I said, man, I mean, this stuff has got to see the light of day. So I called Neil and Dean and said, you guys cool with me putting them on my record? They said, yeah, better than having it just sitting around doing nothing.
I do want to talk to you about the new band, but you mentioned Van Halen, so I do have to ask.
Gee, who? Go figure.
Yeah, strange, right?
Yeah.
What was the final break with Eddie? What was the final straw?
Well, you mean not the first time? You're talking about this reunion?
The reunion, and then, you know... Then
well, the first time, it was just that we got to a point, I guess a simple little way to put it, because, you know, I kind of don't remember what happened anymore, you know? It's like, God, there's so much have happened since then. That's important. That's not important to me anymore. But one of the things was that it got to the point where I was kind of the leader of that band. People don't realize it. You know, Van Hagar, Eddie was a humble, very... you know, meek guy. He didn't want it. You know, if anyone asked him, what time do you want to rehearse tomorrow? He'd say, look at me and say, I don't know, what time you want to do it? And I'd say, oh, like 2. Okay, two. It was just that kind of a deal. You know, Ed was not a leader at all. He just the greatest guitar player in the world, but not a leader. So I was always handed that job in the band. You know, I brought my manager in, Ed Leffler, when I joined the band. He came in. He was making the business decisions. I was making all the little decisions. What time, when we were going to go out, when we were going to make a record, you know, what, you know, Alex would and I would converse what kind of cover it was going to be. You know, I would write the song, you know, the lyrics and the music, the words and everything. And Eddie was just happy to be in there playing guitar, playing piano, and I'd write the songs with him, you know. And all of a sudden, I don't know what happened, but he woke up one morning and thought that he wants his band back, like I was taking over his band and that I was just the bad guy. And I don't know how this happened, but I think someone poisoned him, you know, quite honestly. That happens in people when you're famous and rich and powerful. And some guy sees a guy like Eddie and going, man, this guy's letting everybody get away with this or get away with that. I wasn't getting away with nothing. I thought I was doing a good job of keeping a band together, you know. And all of a sudden, if I said, okay, 2 o'clock, Eddie go, no, I want to do it at noon. I'd go, okay, fine, we'll do it at noon. Whoa, I don't know, whoa, what, you know, what time do you want to do it? Al would say, I don't care, noon, 2 o'clock, Eddie go, okay, 1 then. You know, it was just like, man, this guy just wants, he doesn't care if it's right or wrong.
Now,
he just wants to say whatever I say, no, and he wants to say, I say, I want the album cover black. He'd go, no, I want it white. I'd say, okay, white. And he'd go, no, I want it black, you know. That's what happened to the band.
Now, do you think it was substance abuse?
Oh, of course. I mean, that's part of it. You know, shoot, everybody knows that. But, but you know, not just that, because there was always substance abuse in that band. You know, everybody drank and did this and did that. You know, it was, you know, we had a pretty good time in that band. I mean, I maybe less than most of the people. Mikey and I were kind of, and then Alex went completely sober, and there was a time when Eddie was the only guy that was really out there. But I don't think that was totally it. I really think someone came in, like, you know, when Leffler died and we got our new manager. I hate to even say his name.
Yeah.
That's why I really feel in my gut that he had a lot to do with poisoning Eddie, because he knew he couldn't control me because I was too smart for him to, you know, trick me into something. But Eddie was so vulnerable because he never cared about business and he never paid attention to, you know, how much money there was or how much power we had or anything. Eddie just wanted to play music, and that's when he was at his best too. And this guy came in and thought, well, I'll get to Eddie. And when I left that band, for your information, the guy became an equal partner in the band in the name Van Halen, and they had to sue him to get it back years later when they realized what they did. Now, if I'd have been in that band, that guy would have never got, you know, been a co-owner of that band like we all were, you know.
Right.
He just walked into it, and they let him do it because Eddie didn't know about those kind of things. You know, I'm sure he's smarter than that now, but at that time he was vulnerable because he had never made those. We had a manager like Ed Leffler who made every business decision for us, and they were all excellent. And he was my friend and my manager as well before that. And so him and I were close, and I learned a lot of those things from him. I would have never let that happen. And that's why I got thrown out of the band, I think, is because I think he came in, saw that he couldn't get away with doing anything like that as long as I was around, so they got rid of me.